Hello and welcome to This Climate Business, the podcast about turning the climate crisis into opportunity. Please follow us on social media and rate the podcast as it helps others to find us. I hope you enjoy the show.
2 years ago, Unilever Australia New Zealand became a B Corp. It was the first really large corporate with household brands like Surf and Persil to join a scheme that's been home to environmental hero brands, more like EcoStore. So why did Unilever join? What did they discover in the process? And what impact has a major corporate had on such a spirited brand as B-Lab? Well, to answer all that, I'm joined by Cam Heath, the Managing Director of Unilever New Zealand, and Andrew Davies, CEO of B-Lab. Andrew, Cam, thanks for joining me on This Climate Business.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Cam, you know, as you're a large business, you don't have to join B Corp. You've probably got your own internal sustainability standards. You've got your own compliance requirements as a major organisation. But you chose to kind of expose yourself to the requirements of B Lab and become a B Corp. Why? What's the motivation?
Yeah, great. Unilever is, as you said, a big business, and we own a lot of the brands that are in Kiwi households for well over 100 years now. So brands like Tresemme, like Dove, like Magnum and Ben & Jerry's. And you're right, it's not a requirement for us to become a B Corp or to go through the certification process. But what we do know is that here in New Zealand, around 66% of Kiwis expect organisations to be doing more in the environmental space, in the social responsibility space, and they're looking for us to be driving that change. We also understand that about a third of millennials or Gen Z people within the workforce, about a third of them will refuse to work for organisations that don't align to their personal values. So we know for our shoppers, showing great signs of sustainable practices and social responsibility is really important. We understand for the workforce, it's really important for people in choosing a place to be employed. We understand that suppliers, so businesses that do business with us, are looking to partner with organisations that prioritise sustainability. And we also understand that environmental instability and social challenge are two of the biggest risks facing businesses today. And what's great about B Corp is B Corp looks holistically about how you act, how you behave, what policies you have in place across multiple different parts of your business, and then provides a trust stamp for suppliers, for employees, for consumers to say that you're a business that prioritizes strong social, strong environmental, strong governance within your business. So that's why it's important to us and why, while it's not a requirement of the business, it's something that we're really passionate about and what we wanted to do as a business and as a team.
There's a lot in there, and well done on ticking off all the points. But let's just come back to the B Corp in particular, because there are other accreditation schemes internally. Unilever internationally has its own sustainability program. You know, B Corp and the B Lab had been, in my mind at least, associated with smaller companies, with pioneers. Why did you choose that as opposed to, I don't know, something like Toitū, which might be, say, around carbon emissions, or another environmental standard globally that presumably Unilever already kind of latched onto?
Yep. Yeah, I think for us, the key attracting factor of B Corp is just how holistic the certification is in looking across everything from your environmental procedure and approach to your contribution back to communities, to the way in which you work with your staff and the policies in place you have to create a really engaged and fulfilled workforce, through to the governance and policies you have in place. And that holistic nature of the B Corp certification and just how broad the scrutiny is that kind of goes into your business as you go through that certification is what really differentiates B Corp from some of the other sustainability or other credentials that you can have as an organisation.
Yeah, okay, that's really good. You know, I've met quite a few B Corps now that have been through this process, and all of them look like they've just done a PhD. They, you know, look kind of exhausted. You seem very relaxed, but What was the hard part? You know, what did the process throw up for you that you needed to improve on? Because it produces a kind of materiality statement, doesn't it, about where you're strong and weak?
Yes, yeah. So the certification process is quite rigorous. As I said, the process took us around 2 years. So back at the beginning of 2020, we decided that after about 13 years of having sustainability as the core purpose of our global organisation and having the Unilever Sustainable Living Program in place for about 13 years, which put some pretty stretching goals in terms of what we wanted to achieve in the social and the environmental and people's health space, that we wanted to go after B Corp certification. We rallied a team of about 10 people internally to focus purely on doing that, and it took them about 2 years to get through that certification process. So it was intense and time-consuming. And I think two of the big challenges that we faced going through the process, first was we started doing this at the beginning of 2020, which was when the global pandemic hit. And it's very easy to get distracted by the here and now and the short term. And it was really important for us to deal with what was happening in that period of time, but not lose sight on the bigger picture and what we needed to do and what we wanted to do as an organization. So that was a big challenge during that period to kind of add that certification process in on top of everything else that was happening in the world in early 2020.
I mean, I'll just quickly interrupt, but that's super interesting, isn't it? That the cost of living crisis, a pandemic, there'll always be a reason to not continue with your sustainability journey, right? But
absolutely.
You decided to push on through. You motivated your team. What did you do to kind of balance those two forces?
Yeah, the second thing that was really important for us was finding the right people internally who were inherently passionate about sustainability, inherently passionate about the big goal of becoming B Corp certified.
Yeah,
and to create the space within their workload to be able to take on the additional responsibility and tasks that are involved in that certification process. So having those kind of champions or those change agents within the business who were really passionate about the journey and are really passionate about the outcome of what we were trying to achieve, and then creating space within their workload in order to be able to focus on the certification was really important.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of part of the process too, isn't it, of actually empowering the people who are the enthusiasts.
Absolutely.
In the business. That's dangerous by the sound of it. So the actual process was quite hard. What were things that were thrown at? Where were you weak that you had to address? And 2 years on, I suppose, are you actually addressing those things?
Yeah, sure. Yes, some of the areas that we've really focused on, and I guess it's important to also recognise that the B Corp certification is not a destination, it's an ongoing journey. So it's through the certification you understand where you're strong, where you're weak as a business, and every 3 years you need to go through a process of recertification, which kind of really focuses your team and your business on making sure that you're driving continuous improvement within the kind of day-to-day. And a couple of the things that we really focused on was some of the processes and policies that we had in place with our people. So since our original certification, we've embarked on a 2-year trial of a 4-day work week where we offer our staff the chance to work 80% of their hours, deliver 100% of the output and receive 100% of their salary. And that's really seen a boost in productivity from our people, really, really great kind of outcomes in terms of attrition for the business, better work-life balance for people, and actually seen an acceleration of the performance of the business at the same time.
Is that right?
Which has been really, really interesting.
Why is that, do you think?
I think when we talked about empowerment and how important and powerful empowerment is. And I think when you empower people and you bring a shared reward to the table, where you say to people, if the business is performing well, we'll share the outcome and the reward with you. And there's nothing better than the gift of time back into people's lives.
Yeah.
So that's been the empowerment to say to people, if you can help us deliver better performance as a business, we're going to share reward and outcome with you has been critical to the success of the 4-day work week.
I originally asked you where were you weak. So people was one area you've addressed. I'm sensing that a business like yours, which makes a lot of packaged goods, has a lot of chemicals in it, that you probably have an environmental footprint that is not enviable, right? A lot of plastic, a lot of shipping, a lot of toxic chemicals that have to be managed. What's your exposure there and what have you done?
Yeah, so it's a couple of kind of elements of that. The first might be some of the way in which we manufacture. And in the last couple of years, we've moved about 70% of all the products we sell in New Zealand are manufactured in Australia. Of those, all of our factories in Australia are now powered by 100% renewable grid energy. So we've made key changes into the way in which we use solar and renewable energy in our factories. Mm-hmm. We've also done a lot of work in improving our formulations. So all of our, about 78% of all of the input ingredients that go into our products are now sourced sustainably across the business. So there's been some really big inroads in the way in which we source goods and source raw materials and ingredients for our brands.
Okay. Let's choose ammonia. How do you source ammonia sustainably? It's such a energy intensive chemical.
Probably not my direct area of expertise, not being in sourcing or procurement myself, but it is something I can
not being the ammonia specialist in the business.
Absolutely.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyway, I'm just choosing ammonia because that's top of mind, but there'll be a huge part of your supply chain that is, you know, full of toxic, dangerous stuff that comes from plants that are probably quite obscure and hard to trace. So tell me about that journey.
So the company has a really clear and publicly available sourcing strategy, which talks around how we're going about transforming the ingredients that we use and the sourcing of those ingredients into more sustainable practices and ways. So that's available online. And part of the B Corp process is to be open and transparent around what policies you have in place, where you're strong and where you need to kind of make further improvement. I know one of the big areas of focus for us, I'll use our laundry category. So we have brands, the brands Persil and Surf. And the way in which we're adapting the formats with it available in the laundry category for consumers and shoppers in New Zealand. And historically, the laundry category has been focused on powders. Powders are heavy, they're large, they're not so great in terms of use in the waterways and the byproducts of that. And we're slowly but surely moving and transforming that category into the capsules format. And the capsules format is a highly concentrated format, which uses less water, uses less energy as the consumer is using it, and has less byproduct that goes into the environment afterwards. So even in the tech that's going into the formats and the products that we have available is helping us to transform the business from reliance on some of those input ingredients or some of those formats which historically haven't been as environmentally friendly or sustainable.
Interesting. Andrew, I'm just throwing to you, as the manager or the lead on for B-Lab, has there been a difference in the way that you're dealing with something as large as Unilever as opposed to the kind of the smaller, more, I don't know, the green brands, the eco pioneers that you're used to working with? Did you have to change your approach to deal with such a huge beast as Unilever?
Oh, absolutely, Vincent. And that's been a big theme of our work really across the last 5-6 years in particular is creating different streams of the same process to suit different kinds of businesses. The process will also adapt, and indeed the questions that we ask will adapt depending on a business's industrial context, its region in the world, its size, and then the way in which we verify or actually check the practices that a business says it's undertaking will also change. So for larger businesses, we'll do more on-site inspections. For really small businesses, it's primarily an online engagement. So yes, the process has had to change, and that's been a really important strategic question for us. You mentioned earlier, Vincent, the idea that B Corp started off with some small hero brands, and that's certainly the case. And some of those cool brands have been really important leaders for lots of industries, brands like Patagonia, for instance, or Ben & Jerry's in the US. And that's a really important idea to create a hero, a picture of what's possible.
Yeah.
But those brands alone can't change the world, and that's what big business can do. So when big business comes along and says, hey, we want to be held accountable, that itself is a pretty significant act in the modern business context when, quite frankly, capitalism has mastered the art of avoiding accountability. It's a really significant act to say, hey, I want to be accountable, and I'm going to put my hand up and hold myself accountable to some independent standards.
Yeah.
And when big business does that, we can see real change at scale, and that's really what's necessary to create a new economy.
In some ways, you're the little guy coming up against the big guy. How have you protected yourself from you're in the room, so you may well want to kick me under the table, Cam. But in some ways, you know, how have you held your ground, Andrew? You know, are you able to go in there and swing a stick? You know, what power does B-Lab have for enforcement or for holding Unilever to account? They've got bigger lawyers than you.
Yeah, look, the power, of course, is in the brand itself, and it's a very esteemed brand that people work very hard. As Cam said, it can take years for a business to achieve it. But the reality is I quite often get complaints from large business saying, how can this process possibly be applied against small businesses? It's far too rigorous. It just doesn't make sense to us. And then the same day I'll get a complaint from a small business saying, how can you possibly scale this rigorous process to big businesses? There's no way that you can have a proper look at them. So to a certain extent, if everyone's complaining, you might be doing something right. But to speak to what's behind your question there, of course there is a tension when you're talking about change or even the idea of creating movements for change. There's always a tension between intimacy and scale. It would be a lot more comfortable if we only certified those brands that people perceive to be the true hero brands in the world. But the reality is people's perceptions and what businesses actually do can also differ. So it's important that even if you're only working with a very small group of brands that people perceive to be good, we still have to do the work to set the standards and ensure that they're accountable. And that work can scale. We can apply those same standards to large businesses. So to those that might raise their eyebrows and question how a really large business can achieve the same standard, we simply say, go and have a look. Have a look at the questions that they're asked. Have a look at the material that they've disclosed, because transparency is a really important part of this process as well. And we find most people do tend to sit back and say, well, hey, when I understand a bit more about what goes into becoming B Corp, some of those concerns about the different range of businesses do tend to dissipate.
There's a kind of a philosophical question at the heart of this, which is if you want to change the world for the better, and let's say you're coming from a position of wanting to address sustainability, let's just pick environmental sustainability, you know, one way would be to be incremental, and that's kind of what you're describing, is an incremental improvement year after year on mainstream brands. Another might be revolutionary, and that is to start again and to abandon the status quo, or at least to drive, you know, to leap into the future. And I'll give you a specific for instance, as the Americans say. Let's take household cleaning products. You know, this new category of cleaning products that's so exciting is the ones that are concentrated powders. Mm-hmm. So declaration of interest, you know, I work for a venture capital firm and we've invested in Cleanery, mm-hmm. which is a, you know, a little pimple on the backside of your business in terms of threats. But what they've done is brilliant. You know, they've created a concentrated powder that ships without any packaging, hardly. Mm-hmm. It's a sachet. So they're not shifting plastic, they're not shifting water. You can use an existing bottle. It's a disruptive technology. Right. I guess my question to you, Andrew, and to you, Cam, is if you really wanted to address sustainability, why wouldn't you just leap into that kind of radical future, that disruptive future, rather than make the kind of year-by-year incremental change to the status quo? Let's start with you, Cam. Right.
Yeah. I think with the type of products that we sell as a consumer goods manufacturer, they're the type of goods that are used every day in households and are quite habitual in the way in which they're used by consumers. And what we find is, and what we love about the B Corp certification, is there's a recognition that business performance and doing the right thing, so making a difference whilst also making a dollar, goes hand in hand. And we need to make sure that there's consumer adoption for new technologies, because with consumer adoption allows us then to create scale with the impact that we make through our brands and products, which then allows us to continue to invest into doing more in the sustainability space. Mm. And what we find is that when you make radical change to a consumer habit, it takes time for the consumer to adapt to that, to accept that, and then to create a new habit. Mm. And if you were to say, take all laundry powders and liquids off the shelf tomorrow and just replace them with an ultra-concentrated powder, power, a format that the consumer in New Zealand is not familiar with, you'll probably see a rejection of that new format, and you'll probably see the consumer kind of move away and try to find other channels, a way in which to kind of go back to their original habit.
It's amazing how adaptable people are. I mean, look what happened in the pandemic. You know, we all stayed home and it was a radical change in behaviour. Couldn't you be a little bit more pushy on the boundaries, Cam?
We could. And I think that's what's great about the B Corp certification and the community that you're a part of, is that as an organisation, we're really open to taking external ideas, to being inspired by people outside of our business, and to continue to drive to do things differently. So within the laundry category, two things that we're doing at the moment. One is, as I said, the capsules format, which is a much more sustainable format. We're focusing and driving on that as a new and emerging format for Kiwi consumers. And we also have a dilute at home product, which is a laundry liquid, which is highly concentrated, which uses significantly less packaging and plastic, which the consumer can take home, dilute themselves at home, which saves a whole lot of shipping of water and in production, and also shipping water around the world. And we're starting to see a really strong adoption of those technologies within the market. And as you said, while it's not an overnight change, it is a change that will drive meaningful impact in the Kiwi market.
And we're talking sizable, right? You said before, Persil and Surf occupy, something like 65% of market share?
About that.
So that is an incredible number of people to shift in terms of behaviour or expectations. Not that I'm letting you off the hook, but I get the point that we've had, decades of behaviours around laundry, and you're saying that that's it's hard to change. It's not up to Unilever to kind of universally declare that everyone should change overnight.
It's hard to change. It's expensive to change too, because you have to communicate that change out to consumers as well, which takes time and takes investment in marketing, in awareness, in driving kind of that adoption and the behaviour change. So we're committed to it. We've got the right products and formats on the shelves. We're open to new ideas from industry, from other businesses, but it is something that we find needs to happen or takes a little bit of time to happen, and doesn't necessarily always happen overnight.
Andrew, I'm probably not qualified for your role because I'm too impatient. I just want to jump into the future. As someone that's really motivated to articulate and drive to a sustainable world, what keeps you engaged in this kind of incremental improvement? Where is your impatience, and how do you deal with that?
Yeah, and I'm really enjoying your answer there, Cam. I mean, it's about using the power of capitalism to change how we work, in the sense that you're adopting innovations and creating new possibilities, but you have to bring a whole bunch of stakeholders along on that journey, or they won't stick. And capitalism's special power is that it's the best system we've found to drive that innovation, which doesn't inherently make it a great system, but it's the best one we've landed on. So let's try and make it work better. And I think, Vincent, that's my answer to the question, is that I enjoy seeing change happen. We really look to drive that change through three ways. The most obvious one is in the behaviours of business. So when they certify, as Cam said, it can take a couple of years of hard work to change a business in order to meet the standards and get certified. But we then tell the stories of B Corps and businesses like Unilever who are doing things differently. And that storytelling is a really important, and again, what gets me excited, it's a really interesting part of what we're doing. It's creating a window into the future, showing what's possible. How does a small business create a great product? How does a big business maybe adopt the idea and start to roll it out at scale? What does different business look like? What does accountability look like, particularly inside large corporates? Those stories really help reshape one of the fundamental questions, which is, what is the role of business? And we've been constrained in this world for the last particularly 50 years, but you can draw a longer bow around the idea that the role of business is to make money and provide returns to shareholders. And we're having a pretty fundamental conversation about a different role of business. That's what gets me particularly excited, because those conversations change the cultural norms. The idea of the role of business is always evolving. But I think for the last 5 or 6 years in particular, it's been an exciting time to see business leaders step up and say, hey, we recognize we have to do business differently, because the model that we're all engaging in is itself not sustainable.
Mm.
And then in turn, that leads to our last lever of change, which is structural. Ultimately, if you're going to introduce new forms of business, new rules for business, they always work best when they're based on current acceptable practices with evidence. When regulators try and impose a radical new standard on business that they don't understand, they'll fight it. They'll say that it's impossible. They'll lobby. They'll do all the things that muddy the waters of change. Whereas if we're building new laws and regulations on proven practice and evidence of something that works, they tend to stick and they tend to be accepted in a more widespread way. So for me, the blend of those three drivers of change, behavioural, cultural and structural, is what keeps the work inherently super interesting.
I guess the question is, Cam, there's incremental innovation and then there are disruptive innovations. To what extent does Unilever engage in that second part, any disruptive kind of change, which is hard for you as a large business, right?
Yeah, I can think of two examples of where we've made quite disruptive change, but it's required bigger change than just us. And where we've taken an approach as an organization to open up that innovation to the market, because that's where the true power lies. The first is probably within our ice cream business, one of the biggest areas of emissions for us locally in New Zealand and around the world is the freezers that we put in place to store our ice cream within stores. And we've developed technology which allows those ice cream freezers to run at a temperature about 25% higher than what they run today. Now, that significantly reduces the usage of electricity within the stores, which is great for the vendors because it reduces costs, but it's also great for the environment because we don't use as much power.
Right. So your ice creams won't melt, but the other guys might.
Potentially. And that's the challenge we face as an organisation, is how do we make sure that that's industry-wide change and not just change for our business. So we've opened up that technology to the market and shared that with competition, with other manufacturers in different frozen categories, and hopefully that will help to drive total category change and amplify the impact of that tech.
Roughly speaking, has it been adopted? Was that a welcomed open source moment?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we've got quite a large number of countries around the world now deploying out more energy efficient freezers, which run at that higher temperature. And that houses both Unilever brands and also competition's brands. Mm. And it's also been, the tech has been kind of made available and open to the market. I don't have the stats on competition and how much it's been embraced, but it's out there and available for everyone in the industry who uses freezers within their asset fleet to use.
Great. Yeah. And you were going to mention a second one.
Yeah, there was another example which talked around the idea of progressive change over time with consumers, particularly within categories which are highly habitual. We had another example within the deodorants category where we had developed some proprietary technology around compression. And what that allowed us to do was to put the same amount of sprays or the same amount of deodorant in a much, much smaller can, a compressed can. And to the similar example to ice cream, whereby to make that change as Unilever and only through Unilever brands was going to really limit the impact that would have within the market. So again, we made that technology open source and available to everyone who makes aerosol products, anyone who makes deodorant products. Now, what we did find, though, there's a real key consumer barrier to that change, which made that initiative and that innovation unsuccessful in the end. And that was the fact that when you put a smaller can on the shelf next to a bigger can, the consumer looked at the big one and the small one, saw the same price, and then said, "I'm obviously going to take the bigger one."
That is so depressing.
And that's a key challenge.
But that's the reality of what you're dealing with, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. The bigger must be better.
Exactly. And so it takes a lot of time to educate consumers. It takes a lot of money to drive awareness and drive adoption and drive that habitual change. And even when there's the best efforts of organisations, when that's kind of opened up and created an innovation platform for industry, it's still really challenging to create consumer change and drive adoption of new technologies. And that's sometimes why a progressive investment over time is a more sustainable and a stronger solution solution to drive change rather than something that kind of disrupts the market overnight and forces a consumer change which maybe won't be adopted as easily.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Andrew, as a B-Lab observer, that must be very frustrating to see how consumers actually are the handbrake on change, not necessarily business at times.
Look, absolutely. But I also get deeply inspired by those stories because that's people inside what many people around the world and with respect, Cam, might describe as one of the world's big corporates. They're, to a certain extent, changing the rules of business by saying, hey, we need to open source. We need to collaborate. We need our competitors to come along on this to have impact. And that's just so inspiring when you hear that happening at scale because that is the kind of behavior inside business that we need to drive real change. So, yes, absolutely. Make it a personal note. Next time you see that smaller package on the shelf, look closely. Maybe it's a better product.
That is interesting. Well, speaking of compliance, you know, you've talked about the upside, Cam, of the effect on staff morale, on retention, on growing market share, which is quite amazing. There's also a stick aspect to this, right? And we've had a number of bits of legislation that have gone through recently in New Zealand, probably the same in Australia, I imagine, Andrew, around exposing your supply chain to more scrutiny, the TCFD or the, you know, rules around carbon declarations and so on. To what extent, Andrew, are those compliance requirements around emissions management or supply chain management driving interest in B Corp certification?
Yeah, it's incredibly complementary. And for one part, most of the increasing regulation that we're seeing is around reporting and disclosure, which is a critical step. But a reporting obligation, if you like, reporting shows where you sit, something like B Corp shows where you stand. And what I mean by that is that a B Corp model is about performance, actually changing your business to perform to a higher standard. Reporting, to be cynical, you can report on a beautiful recycled paper annual sustainability report, but effectively disclose some pretty terrible performance. Now, of course, the intention of reporting is to bring transparency, bring some sunlight in and really motivate people to perform better because they're exposed to scrutiny. So it's a crucial part of it. And even where some of those regulations do start to touch on actual performance standards, actually require businesses to be better, they tend to be a lifting floor, if you like. They tend to lift the laggards up from pretty base level performance. There is always a role for leaders and leaders to hold themselves out to be accountable. So I think it's a very complementary part of what we do to have increasing regulation. And the other point that I would make is that there's this cliche that businesses hate red tape. In our experience, businesses like certainty. They like good, clear structures in which to do what they can do best, which is innovate, create new things.
Yeah.
And so regulation also needs to be built on a consistent approach and a long-term approach to what good practice looks like for the mainstream. So again, I think it's ultimately quite complementary, and we certainly haven't seen a reduction in demand from increasing regulations over the last few years.
Where are you going with this, Cam? Like, what is the horizon or the ambition? Can you tell us about what it might look like? And what, you've got another audit period, next year?
We do.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, imagine that 3 years hence, what's on the list of to-dos for Unilever?
Yeah, so we're coming up to our recertification in 2025, which is an exciting time for us to kind of put another kind of lens over the progress that we have made since our original certification, but kind of get a sense check as to, you know, where we still need to do further work as well. And a couple of things that are on our focus and our minds as we kind of approach that recertification is we're doing a lot of work with our procedures and policies internally. We've done some work around gender affirmation, around miscarriage leave, around interchangeable public holidays, all policies designed to help to provide greater diversity, equality and inclusion within the organisation.
Mm-hmm.
We've just actually made a change, and we'll continue to implement that change in our car fleet in New Zealand, where we've moved I've got about 35 cars on the road, and we've moved them to 15% electric vehicles, and the remainder of the fleet will be our plug-in hybrid vehicles. And we've installed electric chargers into all of our people's homes. And we believe that through that change, we'll reduce our emissions in New Zealand of our fleet by about 90% versus the baseline prior. Mm-hmm. So the continued adoption of in-home charging and really kind of realizing that change is a key priority and focus for us. And as we continue to reformulate and think around the sourcing of ingredients and the formulation of our ingredients, we've got some really great projects coming down the pipeline from our brands on how we'll continue to drive a more sustainable future through some of the brands and categories which we have business in.
This is sort of product innovation, so different formulas, different formats.
Correct.
Yeah, interesting. And dragging those surf customers into a different kind of future.
Absolutely.
Yeah, interesting. Andrew, a lot of the focus in recent times has been around carbon management, just because I suppose there's a big legislative requirement for large companies. So carbon has driven the discussion, but there's an emerging category of compliance, but also opportunity around nature-based services, or your impact really, in a broader speaking, on nature. How are you evolving B Corp certification to start to bring in some of those cutting edge conversations around where to next for B Corp companies?
Yeah, it's such an interesting space at the moment, Vincent. I mean, standards used to evolve in sort of 5 or 7 year cycles, across many different types of standards as a rough rule of thumb. And what we're seeing at the moment is an incredibly fast pace of change, where even something like a net zero commitment a few years ago was seen as almost best practice.
Yeah, and increasingly, kind of good enough,
yeah. They're being seen as certainly inadequate. As a minimum, people are far more interested in what are your actual plans to change your emissions rather than your commitments. And I think that pace of change is reflective of the pressure that we're living under the moment with a series of global crises. We're starting to really visibly see and feel the impact of climate change, and that's certainly a significant motivator. That's challenged us, as it has many standards organisations around the world. We're currently engaged in a multi-year process of quite significantly rebuilding our standards on a number of different fronts. It's a very deep, unsurprisingly, stakeholder engagement-driven process, so we're at the moment going through a big public consultation phase, both to try and really understand what does high or best practice look like in different segments, and then how can we validate that across different business sizes? You touched on that earlier. What does a reasonable process look like to validate that? So it's a very complex engagement process to answer those questions. But absolutely, we are also looking at the emergence of nature-related responsibilities. We're working very hard with a series of other standards globally. Someone in a Bink bag described it to me the other day as like a game of Tetris on fast, with all these different frameworks and standards coming down at you and you're trying to figure out where to put them. So we have a big obligation to also work with other standard setting bodies and with some of the financial disclosure regulations to make sure that we're interoperable. So we're not asking businesses to do something completely different just because B-Lab seems to think that that's better than maybe what GRI is coming up with or some other platform. So there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes. There's a major project called the Impact Management Project, where a lot of these organisations are collaborating together as well to make sure that where there is best practice being identified, perhaps by a specialist certification or set of standards, we recognise that and we say, well, if you're complying with that, well, that's good enough for us as well.
That's
so the short answer is lots of collaboration and a lot of change.
And so you're sort of hoping that the effort that might go into complying with one regime might apply to another. I'm reminded of writing award entries. You write one for the high tech awards, but it's very applicable for the marketing awards. That's kind of what you're getting at.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's an obligation that we have, is to make sure that we are recognising the work that other standards setting bodies are doing and working with them. I think that's the best thing we can do for business, is to lift the bar but also simplify the process.
Yeah, interesting. Well, let's hope that the current cost of living focus doesn't distract us from the main deal. Thanks, Andrew Davies from B-Lab and Cam, thanks for joining us in the studio from Unilever.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to This Climate Business. If you like the show, please rate us as it helps others to find us. Ka kite anō.